Appreciate Greg leading Master the Tempest is Raging. That's a difficult song to lead. It was a beautiful rendition. I remember the worst rendition I've ever heard of that song. I was teaching a Timothy class, and one of the little boys in the class wanted to lead that song, and I tried and tried and tried to talk him out of it. He's about 8 years old. You know how the boys will start the song, and then somebody has the responsibility to kind of catch the tune and make it go. And with all full vigor, he said, "Master, the temple is raging." And I broke out laughing, and I couldn't help him. There were three or four different groups that started off on their own, and just it was just like, who's going to win this battle? It was horrible, horrible, horrible song. I'm going to date myself, and I'm also going to ask some of you to date yourselves. How many of you remember when the Arbuckle Mountains, when I-35 was completed through the Arbuckle Mountains? I'm the only one. Okay, there's a few here. People would walk around saying, 3 hours to Dallas, you know. And if you had driven 77, you knew how difficult that was going through the mountains and what tremendous amount of time it took. And if you went at a bad time, like a Friday evening or something like that, it could really take forever to get through there. And it was kind of it was an amazing thing to think that they had just literally knocked off a portion of the mountain. I think I have some pictures of that. It looks like the Dark Ages, doesn't it? They just blasted their way through. And as you drive through there, even today, you can go by and you'll see the bit marks, the drill marks, where they drilled down and blasted various sections of that out. That's a little more recent picture of that kind of situation. And we kind of sit back and we say, wow, what can modern man do? 4 million cubic feet of rock came out of there. Now, I know some of you are thinking about areas in maybe where you live or in the Pacific Northwest and other places where it's just construction projects through mountains are so much greater even than that one. But we kind of look at man and say, wow, we can knock down mountains to build a highway. And Jesus tells us that we have the power, we have the capacity, we have what it's required to literally move a mountain. And we read those passages and we don't really, I think, internalize what Jesus is trying to tell us and how inspiring he's supposed to be or truly, truly is to us. I had more pictures than I thought. Sorry. Matthew chapter 17, verse 20. He replied, "Because you have so little faith, I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move. Nothing is impossible for you." A little bitty mustard seed, so tiny that you can barely see it, really. And Jesus is saying to his disciples, all you have to have is this little core. And if you start there, you grow to the place where you literally can move a mountain. And probably all of us in some capacity or in some situation today are facing situations where we need to move something. We need to go up against some obstacle, perhaps some obstacle that Satan's put into our lives or things that have come from other directions. And we need the power and the resources to conquer those mountains that so easily develop in our lives. Moving mountains is not about superficial kind of things. You may remember when Jesus was taken to Herod. Pilate found out that Herod was in Jerusalem during Jesus' trial and sent him over to Herod, Luke chapter 12. What does Herod want? He wants Jesus to entertain him. Hey, why don't you move a mountain? That would be interesting. And then you could move it back. The Jews were constantly coming to Jesus and saying, create a sign, do a sign, do a miracle. And a lot of times we don't understand those passages. We'll start with Matthew chapter 12, verses 38 and 39. Then some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law said to them, "Teacher, we want to see a miraculous sign from you." Others tested him by asking for a sign from heaven. Then the Jews demanded of him, "What miraculous sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?" And as you read those passages, you may be a little bit confused because Jesus is constantly doing miracles.
When John the Baptist sends him the message and basically is asking, is it time yet? And Jesus says, you go tell John, and he lists all these miraculous things that he's doing. Go through the Gospels. What is it that these Jewish leaders are wanting? They're wanting a miracle on the spot to their liking and of their choosing. Much like Gideon. You know, I want to change this, make this fleece wet or make the fleece dry. That's what they wanted Jesus to do. And Jesus was unwilling to do that. Why? Well, number one, even after Jesus had done all these miraculous signs in their presence, they still would not believe in him. It wasn't going to do any good. But that's not the way it works. Miracles are there to create belief. That was certainly true in Jesus' time. It's true in our own time as well. They're not there for entertainment. They're not there so somebody can have a sign that's manufactured, or they feel like they can control the circumstances and various kinds of things. And so we get into all this intellectual kind of approach, and we forget about the reality of what Jesus is talking about here. He's talking about power. There is power available through God. Nothing is impossible, and that power is available for you. You can access that. You can do that. Why would you need to move a mountain? You know, sometimes I think when we read this move a mountain thing, we think of, a guy with a wizard's wand. You know, he goes out there and then says, okay, move over here. Okay, now it's your turn. The other person, you know, does his little practice and they're all, yeah, I can do this. That doesn't fit anything at all like Scripture. When do we move a mountain? We move a mountain when we're headed for it at 100 miles an hour. That's what life creates for us. We don't go out there and play with God's power and say, well, let me test it out a couple of times. And if it works well enough or it works quickly enough, then I'll go back and use it maybe when the time is right. The reality is we don't get practice sessions. We are based on faith. And in critical moments, when something needs to be done, when something needs to be resolved, when something needs to be moved, God manifests within us and others the capacity to do those things. It's not because we've practiced it, because God's power is there at that particular moment. It's blocking your progress. It's blocking your development. It's blocking your growth. It's blocking you being the kind of person that you want to be. And so you say to God, help me take this out of the way. I want this gone. This morning, I think the question I would ask is, what's your mountain? Now, this is Father's Day. And although this lesson isn't specifically about fathers, I understand from talking with a lot of people, especially with some of you, that the challenge of fatherhood is a big challenge. How do you do that job effectively? And for a lot of men, it becomes literally a mountain they would like to move. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying here, but one of the things that we can credit to feminism is a renewal in fatherhood. Because of the emphasis that's been given there, the more and more men are aware of what it's like and what's required to be a father. And I want to say to those of you who are being fathers, thank you, and continue to do that. If we look back kind of historically for a while, we see a lot of dads who really didn't do much fathering in a lot of cases. They turned that over to the wife, and they went out and they, you know, made the living and they did the physical kinds of things, and frequently the women were the people who were leading the family, literally, because they were involved in raising the family. And fortunately, in the last 40 years, that's shifted. And a lot of men have come back and said, no, I understand that this is my God-given responsibility. But a lot of us didn't have much modeled for us in previous generations. And so we don't do it as well as we'd like to. It takes some learning. It takes some growing. We're not always going to do the right thing. We're not always going to say the right thing. There are going to be mistakes that are made. And that doesn't mean that you aren't a good father. That doesn't mean that you're not trying your best. And it doesn't mean that God isn't using you, even though there are moments when you mess up a little bit. If that's your mountain, then you need to address it. God, help me do this. Move this out of the way. Give me the strength to overcome my inabilities that are connected to this particular area. Because it can be just literally overwhelming. Another mountain that comes up in a lot of people's lives is the challenge between being spiritual and being carnal. As Christians, we want to be spiritual people. And as Paul mentioned in Romans chapter 7, there's this constant beating of the carnal nature inside of us that pulls us in a carnal direction. And we're constantly at war trying to decide how do we do that. And again, there are mistakes that we make. We make carnal mistakes. But if we continue in that path and we continue in God's grace and Jesus' blood, then we are stronger and stronger as we move along. We developmentally grow into that process. And hopefully as we look back, and I've mentioned this before, sometimes when you look back a year and you try to examine yourself spiritually, you say, you know, I haven't made much progress. But hopefully when we look back 10 years, we go, hey, there's a radical difference between where I was 10 years ago and where I am right now. That's a significant progress. We can do this. And the mountain of getting past our carnal nature. People say, well, that's just the way I am. Well, that's not good enough. We have a carnal side that has to be defeated if we're going to be a spiritual person. And that becomes the mountain that we're going to climb. I mentioned earlier, Satan is always throwing obstacles into our way. Financial obstacle, a health obstacle, a work obstacle, a relationship obstacle. That's part of the way he approaches us. And so in any of our lives on a pretty regular basis, if not a constant basis, there are going to be things coming at us that he's tossing at us. And those obstacles can knock us down. If we allow them to do that, when they injure us, when they hurt us, then we put them aside or we work through them. And we literally are moving mountains when we're dealing with those obstacles that Satan is throwing at us. I like to go to Matthew chapter 6, verse 25. You know, when we come up against a mountain, there's a couple of things we can do. And I'm going to simplify this by just giving two options here. One is we can worry about it. You know, you laid your head on the pillow at night. And anybody play that what if game? You know? What if, what if, what if? And the game gets bigger and the consequences get more dramatic and you find yourself so stressed out or so upset that you really can't get a good night's sleep. And so the next day you're walking around at a disadvantage and Satan is thrilled because he can manage you better when you're sleepy in any kind of a weakened condition. And so he continues to win over and over. We worry ourselves so much. We look at those mountains and we say, how am I ever going to get over that mountain? And Jesus says, look at it a little bit differently. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food and the body more important than clothes? Now, first of all, that passage shames us just a little bit. In Jesus' day, his audience, he's saying, listen, don't worry about what you wear and don't worry about having enough food to eat. Those aren't our primary worries anymore. We may worry about whether we have the right kind of clothes or the food that we prefer, but typically our days aren't really affected by whether or not we're going to have those items. We're going to be warm. We're going to have enough food to sustain our bodies. But there are worries that come up in our lives. And here we have Jesus' command, don't do it. You don't have to. I've used this before, but I can remember when I was growing up that sometimes my friends would say, hey, let's go do something. And then they would describe something really dangerous or dumb. You know, let's go jump off a cliff, you know, just as an example. And you don't want to be the guy who says, I don't want to go jump off a cliff. So you go in your house and say, Mom, can I jump off a cliff? No. You were so relieved to go back outside and say, my mom won't let me. You guys go on without me. In this passage, when Satan comes and says, worry, 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 our answer is, my dad won't let me. My father said not to do this. And I'm not going to get started. I'm not going to go in that direction at all. The other choice that we have is literally to attack the mountain. I was reading not too long ago that when they're training lifeguards in California, there's the possibility that a tsunami could come during any particular moment at the beach or a particular time frame. And the people who drive those jet skis, what they train them to do is if there is a tsunami wave, you don't try to race it to the beach because you're not going to make it. You don't turn sideways because you're going to get rolled by it. So what do? You turn directly toward it and go as hard and as fast as you can because that's your best option for surviving it. I don't know how much courage that would take, but the parallel is the same. That's what Jesus is talking about with us today. When you're threatened, don't run from it. Don't go from it the way. Turn and face it and understand that the resources are there to conquer it. In Joshua chapter 14, verse 12, you remember Caleb. Joshua and Caleb, the only two that were faithful. Caleb goes all through that journey. He comes back to Joshua after the period of conquest and he says, okay, you know the promise that God made to me. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. The older versions say, give me the mountain. And as we know more about it now, it's a broader area than that. And so it's not called mountain so much anymore. Caleb is saying, I'm 80 years old. I'm as strong as I was the day I started out. I want this task. I want this opportunity. I want this moment to be able to literally defeat the mountain. This morning, I don't know what your mountain is. I don't know what your battle is. My guess is that all of us have one of some kind. Maybe we have many of them. Maybe they're all rolled together. And maybe there's so many of them that it looks like it wouldn't be possible to overcome them. But it is. And that's what Jesus is telling us. And that's what Jesus is saying to us. You beat your mountain back, it doesn't stay beaten. 2015, the landslide and the Arbuckles and the terrible traffic that was there. That's when my mom was so ill in Ardmore, and we made multiple trips to Ardmore around 77 or sitting in this for hours and hours and hours. If you beat your mountain, Satan's not going to stop. He's not going to quit. He's going to continue to throw rocks and boulders into your way. And you have to go back and do some reblasting. You have to go back and do some reshaping. You have to continue to grow and you have to continue to develop. You have to continue to marshal and utilize those resources that God provides for us. This morning we extend an invitation. It's God's invitation. If you need the capacity to deal with your mountain, the source is God. And if you need that connection, we'll help you do that in whatever way you need. We invite you to make that known while we sing this invitation song together.